What a week we've had. It's like we're entering somewhat new territory this week in our world. And who knows where it will go. So it's good to be here together, to inhale together, to exhale together. In anticipation of the beginning of the Jewish High Holidays, which begin tonight, I wish you all L'Shana Tova, which means Happy New Year. May it be sweet for you and for those you love. Dan and I were reading the other day a passage from a book by Richard Russo, who is an author maybe familiar to many of you. He was suggesting that in terms of our well-being, which I was thinking of in terms of our year going forward, that few things are important to us as our ability to laugh. So with that in mind, I want to offer you what is considered to be a clean and funny Rosh Hashanah joke. Okay. You might have to pay attention, though. So the president of the congregation went to visit Rabbi Ben Azai, who is in the Tel Aviv hospital, having just suffered a mild heart attack. The president says excitedly, "Rabbi, great news. The board just voted 12-8 to wish you a speedy recovery." That's good, right? That's good. I'm not sure what makes it a Rosh Hashanah joke, necessarily. But there you have it. May your new year be filled with as much humor and more. Our wish for those among us and those around us who celebrate the Jewish New Year, the Days of Atonement that follow it, and the holy day of Yom Kippur is for them to have a thoughtful and robust season and be written, as they may hope, into the Book of Life. So most of you know that we participate in the Soul Matters Sharing Circle, which is an organization that provides themes to Unitarian Universalist congregations for each month. Since we don't follow a lectionary and we don't follow the Torah as our Jewish friends do, the themes help sort of structure our year. And it's nice to know that other UU congregations are participating in the same thoughts and ideas and challenging themselves similarly. We receive resources in advance of the month coming up, so they remind us of the holidays from other faith traditions and from those of our own. So this month, of course, we were reminded of the Jewish holidays, and then also of our somewhat less weighty but annual recognition, which I gather was new to many of us, of the official advent of Universalism in America, which is cast in the miracle story of the farmer Thomas Potter and John Murray, which you heard about earlier. So now you all know there are songs that go with this. Things like "John Murray came over the ocean, John Murray came out of the blue." You can make up your... It's a good way for our children to remember these stories. Next year on September 30th, I hope you'll all join me. We'll celebrate again. So as Oifi reminded us, Thomas Potter built a chapel on his farm, trusting that the good news he wanted to hear would arrive. And then, of course, John Murray shows up, a preacher, a universalist, someone who assures us that we are not preordained to a burning hell, as then contemporary Calvinist doctrine assured, that no loving spirit, in fact, would thus conspire. But Murray, of course, had his ship, and if the wind came up, as Oifi reminded us, he would have had to leave. So lo and behold, a miracle, no wind, and he preached the good news at Potter's Chapel, which is now, 250 years later, by the way, a retreat center called Murray Grove on the coast of New Jersey. So we have kept that history. It's there to visit if you're so inclined. But I wonder if we can imagine having the farmer Potter's conviction. Murray wrote of Potter, "He had unbounded benevolence, was a friend to strangers, and a feeling, faithful man whose hospitable doors were open to everyone and whose heart was devoted to God." So it made me wonder, and I invite you to wonder this morning, is there anything you can imagine that you might consider building a chapel in anticipation of? Let's just pretend we each have farms, or enough land, at least, and the resources to build an invitation. Potter built his invitation based on his hope, his faith, that, as Oifi reminded us, and in the immortal words of the movie Field of Dreams, or maybe, for all I know, Thomas Potter coined it, if you build it, he will come. So what might you build? What good news are you anxious to hear this morning? It begs the question, what are we all looking for? And do we even take the time to imagine it? Oifi and I were talking several weeks ago about this, and she was reminded of a song by an alternative rock duo called They Might Be Giants. Anyone? Come on, really? You know them? Excellent. I was clueless. Alternative rock was not my genre, I guess. I don't know. The song she remembered is called Make a Little Birdhouse in Your Soul. Yeah? It seemed relevant. When I played it on YouTube, she knew all the words, and there are a lot of words in this song, like a lot of words. So I imagine there must be some significant meaning in this tune, right? I really wanted to find the message. So, of course, I fished around on Google and read all kinds of reviews, but one that said, I just don't think this song is that deep. I thought, come on, that's frustrating. I want to find great wisdom. I wanted to find great meaning because I think often we are looking for that, and we are looking for it anywhere we can find it. And okay, so maybe it wasn't so deep, but it was fun. It's about a blue canary nightlight that shines during the night while someone's sleeping, hence the birdhouse in your soul, to always have a home for that canary, that nightlight canary. So in the dark times, maybe there's more meaning in it than my reviewer found. But it didn't answer my question. What are we looking for? I did wonder, it has to do with light. Is that light a kind of hope? And do we even have the language to communicate what that hope might look like for each of us? I attend a Bible study with a whole group of ministry colleagues, and we are led by the Reverend Carl Scovel. So I don't know how many of you may be familiar, that Carl served Unitarian Universalist Ministry for 45 years, 32 of which he served at King's Chapel in downtown Boston. He is a theologically Christian Unitarian Universalist. Carl is an engaging student and teacher of the Bible and its stories. And several weeks ago when we met, he chose to talk about the book of Job, which he described as a case study in suffering. Job is a part of the Bible's wisdom literature, intended to engage us in human concerns, which, if you know the book, for Job was about loss, a lot of loss, and about faith. It's a fairly complicated story. It has Satan and God agreeing to test Job's resolve. One wonders why God would engage in such a test. Carl suggested that the book of Job asks the question, why does God afflict us with suffering? Or, he offered an alternative, why does reality afflict us with suffering? He kept substituting those words for each other. Why does God afflict us with suffering? Why does reality afflict us with suffering? When do we need to call God to account? And then, when do we need to call reality to account? Who said God is fair? Who said reality is fair? I found it an interesting substitution, an engaging substitution. It seems to suggest that there are things with which we can't really argue. Reality just is, right? Is it fair? Hardly. Does it disappoint us? Inevitably. Does it humble us? Does reality bring us to our knees sometimes? I think if it doesn't, there may be something wrong with us. I know that the Buddhists suggest that pain is a human experience, but suffering is optional. Still, those who are not humbled by life, at the very least, may in fact have somewhat exaggerated senses of themselves. We see that on the public stage these days fairly often. Carl's challenge, I think, begs the question, can we substitute God for the reality that is unfair and disappoints us? And to what end? I want to invite you to do something, speaking of invitations to build. So I hope you will all join me. I want to ask you to stretch your arms right now. To stretch your arms up, up, up. To wiggle your fingers. To drop your shoulders. Stretch up again. Raise one hand higher than the other. Now stretch the other higher than the first. Hold your hands together and stretch them back. Open them up and let them drop gently down by your sides. Roll your shoulders a bit to loosen the tension that may remain. That is how I want our questions about reality, and dare I suggest about God and how we speak of it, to feel like a stretch, expansive, reaching, engaging, maybe a little sore, a little uncomfortable. In Bill Sinkford's message this morning on the language of reverence, he quotes the Reverend Forrest Church, who was for many years the senior minister at All Souls Church in Manhattan. The power which I cannot explain or know or name, I call God, Church wrote. God is not God's name. God is my name for the mystery that looms within and arches beyond the limits of my being. Life force, spirit of life, ground of being, these two are names for the unnameable. I am not invested in your belief in God or in your using that word, that symbol, that connection, whatever it might mean to you. I am invested in both our individual and our collective reaching and stretching and engaging and opening through the language of curiosity, the language of yearning and forgiveness, so that I want us to be able to use it without having it close a door on our imaginations. I want our conversations and our vocabulary to be able to help us plumb the depths of our human experiences so that we might better understand them and each other. I wonder how many of you heard the word in this morning's offertory, "I believe in God even when she is silent," and how that felt to you. Were you able to receive it or not? This time between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur for our Jewish friends is understood as a time of personal introspection. One considers the year past and all that has been done well or not done well. One asks forgiveness where needed. One recalls the ways they might improve patterns or habits. We can imagine one builds an invitation to a new and refreshed way of being. So I would invite you to wonder again, what might your invitation include? What are you yearning to bring into your heart? What birdhouse might you build? We are people of doing in this tradition. Marge Piercy's poem that I referenced recently in John Thompson's memorial service describes us well. The pitcher cries for water to carry and a person for work that is real, she writes. We march, we picket, we sing, sign petitions, we show up for people in sanctuary, we work to make biking safe, we question our own implicit bias, we put on concerts and film nights. But we must know why. which is where our invitation comes in. Potter's world was full of condemnation, hellfire and brimstone, as Oifi reminded us. He needed to hear about love. What do we need to hear? And how can we share that need with each other? What do I want? I want to build an invitation beyond just reason, which we are so very immersed in so often. I want to build an invitation to a place of every day, everything holy, and all the time gratitude, regardless of what is confronting us. I want us to sing "Oh, We Give Thanks" every week here and wonder, how is it that what just happened in my life, good, bad, or indifferent, is a lesson, a learning, a blessing on my connection to my spirit and to the life around me. I want to be able to ask, how is God moving in the world now? What, for goodness sake, is she up to? We had a long talk last week in the choir about whether or not that was sufficiently gender inclusive. The problem is when you use the word they, then God becomes multiple, and it's a little confusing. But again, let's not put up too many constraints there. I want to build a chapel where we are always asking ourselves how it is that we are co-creating with the mystery that is beyond us here in the 21st century. In the name of love and in the spirit of justice, what are we being called to do? So I'm going to invite you to do one more thing with me this morning. You don't have to stretch again, unless singing feels like a stretch. I'm going to sing a line and ask you to repeat it. Gonna let my little light shine, shine, shine. 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 Maybe someone down in the valley trying to get home. Maybe someone down in the valley trying to get home. Let's build an invitation that says we know we need each other in the very depths of our souls and our life experiences, and that our chapel might be a light for every soul that needs to find their way home. In whatever language they travel, what a chapel that would be. I will meet you there. So may it be, and amen.